Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well here on this 24th day of September, and it's 90 degrees again. Although, as we have Jason Caldwell from Auburn and to cover him with us, yesterday Don Dunn just was checking to see. It was 99 in College Station yesterday, Jason.
Yeah, it's supposed to be 90.
Yeah, I think 90
Saturday
for a high, so it's going to cool off.
At 2:30.
But down on that field, it's
at least
a little
it's
toasty.
Not turf. It's yeah. not turf, and there's room to move around.
Oh, you're right.
Air to flow. There was not room at Oklahoma, even though it was cooler. There was no room anywhere, and so it was pretty stuffy down there. But yeah, plenty of room at A&M, so it shouldn't be too bad.
Yeah, well, that's coming up on Saturday. Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover joining Bill and Dan. Drew is out today, so Dan at the controls again.
Yeah, great to be back after spending a little time yesterday with the Troy Trojans women's basketball team and watching the first day of practice before we get rolling in a couple of weeks. We're busy, just like most of college basketball, that first Monday in November. And we've talked a lot of basketball.
Oh yeah,
I don't know if it's going to stop necessarily. Even though we're still, I think that A&M game is getting bigger and bigger.
Absolutely,
as it approaches.
We will definitely talk about that. But I mean, got to talk a little bit about Stephen Pearl's introductory press conference today. I thought he handled it very well. Stephen, I don't think he left anybody out.
Just like the 14 and a half minute video that Auburn put out, where it's like, yeah, the runtime, you know, maybe a little daunting for the format, right? For something that gets posted on Twitter or Instagram. That thing is still worth every second of your time if you care about Auburn basketball. And I would say Stephen Pearl's press conference is worth, despite the runtime, I think the whole thing is worth your attention. And if you have the time, it's all over YouTube. All the university's page has it up on the Imogen.
We have the whole thing up on our YouTube page at Auburn Undercover.
Yeah, you've got it up on YouTube. So I mean, it's out there, and the entire thing is worth watching. And just I'm in Montgomery right now helping out with the pets, and so it was especially early morning for me to get to the presser on time.
Dan made it, and I'm so glad I was there.
And
there was a front row seat available for him, so he was able to hop in right there.
Just
get in and get a question in.
Yeah, Justin Ferguson had an empty seat next to him, and then posted on Twitter, and he's absolutely right. And this is an insider reference, I suppose, but he said we're going to look like the MST3K robots with our heads, popping up at the bottom right of most people's shots there of Stephen Pearl. But most of the videos I've seen, I think I got there early enough for people to adjust their cameras and keep the back of my head out of most shots. And Justin got the first question up to Coach Pearl, and I was able to ask him the second one, and I thought he went.
He went into good detail.
Yeah, my question was about the expectations of a Stephen Pearl team. Is sort of, what does he expect from his teams? And he did not. He didn't go brief on.
No, he didn't.
On his philosophies.
And he even started off with great question. So
yeah, but we go way back. So I mean, it's great to see. It's great to see Stephen get this job. And I thought it was a grand slam home run. I thought he was phenomenal today at the press conference.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And Jason, I mean, it's hard to imagine a smoother transition than what is going on right now.
Yeah, no, you're.
I mean, this is as smooth as possible because it's something that's been in the works.
Yeah.
For a while.
Well, and here's the thing. I've said, and I fully 100% believe. There are some, and I don't know that as many of them are necessarily Auburn fans, but are going, oh, he only got the job because he's his son. I'm like, if his name was Stephen Jones and his resume is what it is and he had been here, it is no different than what Duke did. with John Shire. It's the same.
No,
it's the same thing.
I've made that point, and they're nearly the same age. Yeah. I mean, the most glaring difference would be that John Shire and Coach K are not related. But other than that, you're right. It's a guy who.
That's what I'm saying. If his name was Stephen Jones instead of Stephen Pearl,
it's a former player.
It's almost exactly the same thing.
Coming back and spending an extended period of time
working his way up.
In his late 20s and early 30s. Yeah. To the point where I think it's an excellent comparison. And there is. I think Duke gave Coach K a year, right? Didn't they have some? There was a retirement tour. It wasn't as sudden as this. But Stephen Pearl, I think it's crucial. Jason, it's crucial to this that Stephen Pearl doesn't have to go recruit as a blue blood without a track record.
100%.
Because of the timing of this move and because of the roster he's going to coach 6 weeks from now. He gets the chance to have a season of, where he can provide evidence on the court and then go out and sell the product. Which, if you're trying to keep this thing going, especially compared to him taking over in April or May, right? Like if you're trying to keep this thing going, that feels like a much cleaner way to, an easier way to transition from one coach to the other.
Yeah, no, I think you look at it. There's no ideal time. There's none. The thing is that having been out there this summer and watched them practice, I think Stephen Pearl gave a little bit of a hint. Like, Stephen Pearl's been running practices for a while. And I know Bruce Pearl's kind of making his mind up. But these guys know what – I mean, like, even during the season, there's times where Stephen's running practices.
Right.
That's the part of this that I wrote about today is – look, Bruce Pearl has always allowed his assistant coaches to coach.
Mm-hmm.
They always have the scout. It rotates from different guys. They present the scout to the team. They coach it. So they're telling – so they've been as – I can't remember the exact term that Stephen Pearl said today, but Ira Bowman said it too. Basically, look, they've been prepared for this moment because they were allowed to coach. And that doesn't happen everywhere to that extent.
No.
And so I think that's been a big part of this. And so – Stephen Pearl has had the opportunity to basically run the show at times for the last couple of years. And then, obviously, I think a lot of it this summer as Bruce Pearl was kind of figuring things out. So, I thought today was – I agree. I thought it was really good. He touched on everything. He showed some emotion.
Mm-hmm.
I think the thing that – somebody asked, like, hey, his energy, not necessarily – I can't – was maybe aggressiveness on the sidelines or whatever – Stephen Pearl is very black and white. I think it is, hey, here it is or not. I think he will develop some of the nuance that his dad has had over the years. But Stephen's, hey, him and Todd Golden are really good friends. I don't know that he's going to be as animated as Todd Golden is on the sidelines, but I think it's going to be very direct. Like, hey, here it is. Here's who I am. This is what we do.
I agree. Now, I will say this. I don't think that Steven's going to be
he's not going to sit on the bench.
No,
he's not
going to sit on the bench either. No. I mean, he's
No, he's competitive.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've seen that, seen that there on the bench for a few years.
And the fact that Steven becomes the youngest current head coach in the SEC it's an interesting piece of this. And maybe, like, maybe an advantage compared to any other.
I don't think it hurts in recruiting.
Yeah, compared to any other era in the history of the league, because that's something we want. When you think about Bruce continuing to do this, and facing another season of the grind of keeping a roster together, like I would imagine, the further you get from being 18, 22 years old, if you're working with that age, I mean, just every year. It's tougher and tougher to relate. And as Stephen mentioned in the press conference today, some tactics are going out of style, right? And some coaches are fine. I mean,
oh, he talked about coaching hard back in the day.
Jason, I looked it up on Monday when Coach Pearl retired, and the 18-19 season, which wasn't all that long ago in college basketball, that's the first Auburn Final Four. In the preseason, Auburn's 11.
Mm-hmm.
And Bruce Pearl's retirement makes six of the top 11 from that season have had their coaches retire, decide that, college basketball. And a couple of the other ones, I mean, I would look at, like, I know Izzo was in that group too, and you wonder how much longer, like, Izzo and Mark Few are going to do this. But Tony Bennett and Jay Wright, who were both younger than Bruce Pearl,
Coach K,
and Roy. Was still there in 1819.
And I don't know if Jim Larranaga was in there, but he's obviously a guy that was successful, has done the same thing. So you look, and there's been a lot of turnover in college basketball, or more so than we've seen in football. We've seen it more in basketball.
And I thought Bruce had done, I mean, the evidence shows he'd done an excellent job of navigating this world of college basketball, right? The proof is in the product. But, you know, every season it's probably – I mean, your boots on the ground here with recruiting, it's probably more intense than ever before. I mean, with the introduction of legal money,
it's more
and the portal.
Correct. Right. I would say it's more frustrating now than it was even back then, because of the fact that you may do all the right things and it might come down to somebody else going, well, we didn't get this guy, so we've got a little bit extra money. We can give him that money, and it costs you a guy that you thought you had. Mm-hmm. That makes it more frustrating. That's been the part I think that's been probably the most difficult. It, for a long time, you go like, "Hey, we may have a shot at this guy. If we don't, okay, then." But now,
for a long time, coaches. I mean, one thing, and I thought about asking this today, but didn't do it. I wonder. I mean, Steven's the guy that has been responsible for quite a few of the transfers that Auburn's gotten. I mean, he's been very, very – I mean, he's been the guy with the transfer portal. Now that he's a head coach, I wonder, you know, who's gonna have that responsibility.
I think he'll still be heavily involved in doing a lot of those things.
I just wonder if you can do it, if he can do as much, though,
now that he's a head coach. I think he'll still – the good thing is that they've done a lot of that. I would say Matt Gayton's coming in, a guy that was at Iowa, was heavily involved in recruiting. I think he'll be a guy that probably has a lot of that, because in the GM role, he was probably identifying guys already.
Yep.
So I would think he's probably that. And then obviously Ira Corey will be involved as well. And then Ian Borders, he mentioned, mm-hmm. Ian will be a guy that will be a really good recruiter.
A lot of the players on this year's team were at the press conference, not all of them, which some people have pointed out on social media. I would mention that it's 9 a.m. on a weekday.
Correct.
Some of those players
on a class day too.
That's exactly not yet. Exactly.
It's fall semester, and a lot of people have classes.
And Bill, you did this recently enough. 9 a.m. on Wednesday is a
very, very popular.
Okay.
Class
so day. I would say yeah. So there's the possibility there were some scheduling conflicts there. But it still raises the question. I wondered, you know, your thoughts. Like 48 hours in, Stephen Pearl indicated that the roster is on board with this move, and Auburn is expecting to be at full strength. Is that what you expect as well?
Yeah, well, you know, first day, Monday, we went out to practice Monday afternoon. Everybody was there. Now, Keyshawn Hall, Keyshawn Murphy, little banged up. They weren't on the court. Tahad was out there.
Murphy got a shout out at the press conference.
He was there today. I got a chance to catch up with him, because that's a guy that I knew probably back when he was in probably the 10th grade. He's from Ramsey High School in Birmingham, went to Mississippi State. So I've known him because they always came to Auburn's basketball camps. So I've known him for a long time. And so got a chance to see him, say hello.
Ramsey's a program that's done some winning.
Yeah, he was a good player for them. And so, you know, it's one of those things now where, it all depends on who contacts who. The question I would have right now, the toughest part is that who has – money left over.
Who has money and who can get players in school
right now? It's strictly quarter system people. That's it.
Yep.
UCLA didn't start till Monday.
Yep. West Coast.
Stanford, Oregon State, and then there's a couple of Ivy League schools.
Yeah, when I was a UCLA grad student, our football seasons would be over. Before school started.
Well,
it was kind of a bummer.
So they started. Well, it's already
UCLA,
over.
UCLA, they've been over.
Well, that's
over,
what I mean.
Yeah. It's over
that's
now.
That's what I mean.
That's right.
I mean, they started school Monday.
Yeah, it's familiar.
Season's over with.
It's a familiar feeling,
yeah,
right?
That's it. Like, yeah, but they started the 22nd. I looked it up. And so
that's when we used to start,
yes,
somewhere around there.
So that's it. So it'd be schools like that. But, again, who has saved money in preparation for somebody going
because
in the portal in September?
You couldn't be expecting the players on this roster to be available.
No,
because
so,
you had
anybody,
no idea.
Or anybody you go. Right. So, yeah. So, I mean, would there be a possibility? Maybe. But, I think it right now I would be – I don't know that I'd be shocked. I'd be really surprised if the entire roster isn't intact.
And I thought it was interesting that Stephen pointing out that Auburn has – you know, supported, put the support there to move them into the top five of the SEC and NIL.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I think that may have been a little bit of a statement to other people, yeah. Like, hey, if you're coming, it's going to take a lot.
You think about that statement, too. I mean, there are some heavyweights in the SEC,
yes,
in NIL. I mean, you've got the reigning national champion. You've got two other teams that made the Elite Eight. You've got Arkansas and Kentucky not in the group of teams
right.
I just mentioned, and both of them seem to have, you know.
In that group.
Yeah.
They may not be in the group that made the Elite Eight and Final Four.
They're in that top five group.
Yeah.
NIL group.
And you think about the fact that, yeah, I mean, coaches like Nate Oates and Rick Barnes aren't going to just sit idly by, right, while this sort of stuff happens.
And we haven't mentioned either one of the Texas schools.
You're absolutely right. Who could both? I mean,
So that's pretty good company.
Sean Miller doesn't jump. Sean Miller doesn't jump to Texas with the setup he had at Xavier.
Well, Florida just won a national championship. And we know what Florida can do. So, that's a lot of schools in the mix now.
Yeah, so that's a strong statement from Stephen. But, yeah, very impressive introductory press conference for Stephen Pearl today. He even said he'd won it at one point, remember, when he talked about the not tweeting as much as dad. So we can talk about that. But, Jason, with Jason being here, want to talk, get his thoughts on this past week. And then look forward to Texas A&M this coming week. Before we get to our first break, though, let us let you know, you've probably heard the commercials running. Stone Temple Pilots over at the Sweetwater in LaGrange. That's coming up on Friday. We have some tickets for that. So what we will do a couple of times here during the show, we'll take the first caller for a pair of tickets to see Stone Temple Pilots. I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll do the first one right now. So the first caller that wants a pair of tickets to see Stone Temple Pilots in LaGrange on Friday night, give us a call, 334-321-1390.
And Stone Temple Pilots, you know, a seminal rock band of the last 25, 35 years or so. I mean, you think about the, especially the, you know, the sort of the grunge heyday.
They were in that run of Pearl Jam, Alice in Chains, all that group, they were in there and every bit of one of those top groups. Scott Weiland was the lead singer and had a bunch of songs and a bunch of good ones.
No kidding. So we are giving away tickets. We'll give away a pair this hour. We'll give away another pair. We have a winner, so you can hold off. But we'll have one more opportunity for you to win a pair of tickets to see Stone Temple Pilots on Friday night. With that, we'll get to our first break of the afternoon. Love for you to join us
every day. And if you're fishing and loving the great outdoors every day, 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover here in the studio. And congratulations to Jay. He is our first winner of a pair of tickets to see Stone Temple Pilots on Friday night over in LaGrange. And Jay's going to join us on the Drive hotline now. Hey, Jay, congrats.
Hey, thank you, sir. I really appreciate it. I hadn't seen them in concert in a long time, and that would be awesome.
Yeah, no kidding.
Not real familiar with that place over in LaGrange, but I'm sure I'll figure it out.
Well, I've heard really good things about it. They've had some really good shows over there, too.
Oh, that's great. I'm glad to hear it. Jason, I tell you, I remember going over there to Cali with y'all years ago, back when you and Mark and basically a trip over to see us play Southern Cal. It was a hot, fiery trip.
I've said before that, like, Ole Miss 1990 was the hottest game that I've ever been to. That USC game, and everybody said the USC game here, and it was hot in 2003. Mm-hmm. It was worse in 2002 in Los Angeles to me because you don't feel humidity.
Yeah.
And so it, like, I was drained and didn't realize it because I wasn't sweating. And so I was like, hey, then I sat down and, like, Uh-oh, man, you're in trouble.
The thing is, yeah, like dizziness.
Yes, you almost pass out. Yeah, it was a good trip, but it could end
on
better.
On top of that, the mountains were on fire.
Yes.
Yeah, it was a wild trip. But, hey, I got a question for you guys. Any of y'all can answer. But what's the deal with Alvin? Is the plan to redshirt him, or is he not grasping the offense? What's going on with him?
All right, so the answer to the first part, I would think right now, yes, the plan is to slap a redshirt on Alvin Henderson, just because I think once you didn't see him earlier in the year with some running back injuries, you know, the thought that he's still running scout team, I would think, yeah, they're willing to rely on their depth at the position elsewhere and give Alvin a year to adjust to what is, you know, going from 1A, right? Is that right, Jason?
Yes, 1A, where he was basically just a Wildcat quarterback. Whenever they ran the ball, they just kind of snapped it to him.
It's a pretty significant step up to go from that to the SEC, and I can understand why it may not be as smooth as Alvin's or as Omar's transition, because Omar, was playing.
Seven A football,
and was this close to campus.
Yeah.
Well, I was hoping to get to see him at least a couple games, but I certainly understand if he's not grasping the offense and all, and believe me, I'm sure it's going to take some time anyway. But excited about him. He's going to be really good. I've seen him play. I've done a little refereeing, and I've seen him play quite a bit. Boy, he is. As advertised, very good. And and speaking of refereeing, I won't mention anything that happened over in Oklahoma, I'm ready to put that behind us, and hopefully we'll have a better showing over there in College Station. I just came from Texas, and it's going to be pretty hot over there this weekend too.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. Jay, appreciate the call, and congratulations. Enjoy the show.
Hey, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
All right. Let's see, Jason, a little bit of news today, not good news, an injury update. Mm-hmm. I mean, Hugh Freeze just sort of offering up that Horatio Fields broke his foot in practice yesterday, going to be out for a while.
Yeah, you know, been a guy that's been, you know, pretty clutch for them in some big situations and being physical outside. And so, and as Hugh Freeze said today, this is Perry Thompson's opportunity. He's never going to have a better opportunity than he's going to have right now, because you look at it, and I would guess that when they go three wide, that you'll see more of Eric Singleton and Malcolm Simmons on the field together. Obviously, Cam Coleman's going to be out there, but this is going to give Perry Thompson a lot more involvement.
Sure,
especially,
he's the next guy.
And here's the thing, especially on early downs, when you're going big, big, maybe one slot receiver inside, then he's going to be on the field a lot more. I would guess probably 15 to 20 more snaps for him on a Saturday. The question is, where do you go after that? The other guy I think to watch for is going to be Sam Turner.
Yeah, I think so.
Sam Turner's physical, the freshman. He could be a guy that gets in the mix as well. So those are two guys. Hey, they're talented enough, and this is going to be an opportunity.
Do you think there could be temptation to run more tight end heavy formations because you have less
ratio?
I think if
you're last year, then I think you go, okay, that's what you do. To me, that's been maybe as disappointing a part of this offense as we've had so far. Because, look, Brandon Frazier, I think, is a guy that's done some things. I thought in the preseason that 15 was going to be a guy that was going to really help them. And he just hasn't been able to make the plays.
He's like a basketball player that can get to the basket and struggles to finish. Where it's like you're doing the hard part. I think Preston has gotten open consistently. Yep. In four games, but I just, you know, I don't know how many opportunities you get before they have to just start thinking about options they view as more reliable. And in that case, it could be, yeah, I mean, you wonder if Brandon Frazier sees an uptick in snaps that way. But yeah, I mean, you would think that Horatio would have benefited maybe as far as if they're going to get away from featuring the tight end, you're going to see more Horatio Fields instead.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. And that was kind of the question I'd had is, you know, maybe could – before this happened, I've kind of posed a question to myself, and when somebody asked, is like, could you use Perry Thompson in that role?
A little bit as a tight end.
And now, obviously, that's out the window. He's going to have to be strictly in where he is. And so I don't feel like there's anybody else that kind of fits that role right now for them. So You're going to have to get some help and some playing time out of there. What you could do is, you know, especially if Jeremiah Cobb can
I was about to say Cobb and Alston together is the other option.
If he can get the cast off that little finger and be fully going, he still catches the ball fine. But then it might give you some more options, especially if you have to move. Say, I think Malcolm's the more likely guy you move outside, and I think you keep Singleton inside. But then it might open up the door to where Jeremiah Cobb, he may be in the slot.
When this team was at full strength, you were speculating that Cobb could be an option on the sweep game. And if you wanted to get Cobb and Alston more snaps, you could run Alston as the traditional running back and have Cobb doing some
Bryce
things
Cain's
out of the
guy, too. Bryce Cain had a good preseason.
Yeah, you're right.
Bryce Cain.
How's I wonder how Jeremiah's hip is.
Yeah, you know, he was in a full contact jersey the other day.
That may answer the question that some people had of, why didn't he get the ball more against Oklahoma? You got a hip pointer?
I think it's that. That's why. I think that and pass protection a little bit. I think they felt better about the more physical, older guy in Damari Alston being in there in some pass protection situations.
Even though Damari was coming off a shoulder injury, although it sounds like they feel pretty good about what they saw from him in Oklahoma. Yeah. And I would guess, you know, with or without Cobb's hip in question, I would guess that after seeing what he did against Oklahoma – in limited action touching the ball, you could see an uptick, and we'll see what they decide to do. But I would think maybe a more Damari heavy approach, at least early, could be on the menu to see what A&M can do.
Although
A&M gave up a lot of passing yards against Notre Dame, and I know people are going to be
they did, but I
people
think
might A&M, be tempted A&M, to test that.
We'll get Jason's thoughts on this after the break. I mean, A&M may be a little more susceptible to the run than some of the teams at Auburn's
It's a little different. I think now, hey, you may go out there Saturday and it may look completely different. I feel like that maybe the best defense Auburn's going to see this year they saw last Saturday.
I think the front
especially. Now, maybe not in the secondary, but I think that front group, especially because of the way they played.
I hope Auburn didn't see many better than that.
Yeah, because they got after it. It's really interesting. Texas A&M 72nd nationally in rushing defense.
Yeah.
When you look at – you know, they haven't given up a ton, but they've given up some. And the most interesting one is now UT San Antonio, they got a really good running back. They ran for 203 in the first week. Utah State only 78. Notre Dame did 136.
And had
a bunch of passing yards as well. They've given up 5 rushing touchdowns in 3 games.
They've got a superstar in the backfield too, Notre Dame.
So they played two really good running backs. But I think there's going to be some opportunities to run the football Saturday. Yes, I agree.
All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Again, love for you to join in. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline here on the Wednesday Drive.
Auburn football is 390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover here in the studio. Love for you to join in. Anything on your mind sports-wise, a lot to talk about. I mean, there's some big, big ball games this week in addition to the Auburn-Texas A&M game, but obviously we're focusing on that one.
Yeah, how about this, Jason? First time we're going to talk to you since Auburn, Oklahoma. I'm curious, how did you think Jackson held up in, you know, that big road test that you knew he was going to have against his former team? And what are you expecting out of the Auburn offense on Saturday?
Yeah, and I thought he held up fine. If anything, I thought he was too patient at times and staying in the pocket when – you know, there are a couple opportunities like, and they weren't going to let him run, which was a big part of that.
They did a great job of keeping him from running where he normally does, and that is between the tackles. Yeah. And he's really good at doing
it. It's crucial to think, too. Hugh Freeze did not say, well, there were times when Jackson needed to take off and run.
Correct.
He said there were times when Jackson needed to trust that his receivers were going to win their one-on-one matchup and go give him a shot to do it.
And I think that was it. I think, you know, and we've talked about it all summer. And here's the thing. If you don't have the other mistakes Saturday, taking sacks versus turning the ball over was still good enough to win a game, in my opinion. All the things you did, all the things offensively you did Saturday now, but you got to make a couple throws. Even with all that, if you don't have the three special teams mistakes.
At least three.
The three that you have that you know of, the two penalties, four.
Yeah.
Yeah. The four special teams mistakes, one of them directly to 7 points. The other ones where you back you up. So if you those plays alone, and then obviously you look at that the one play of the game was the first one, because that's a 10-point swing.
Mm-hmm.
They ruled it a fumble. You pick it up, you run for a touchdown. They overturn it. They kick a field goal. So instead of you being up 7-0, you're down 3-0. That's a 10-point swing. So even with everything that happened offensively, you still had opportunities to win the game.
You still have a lead in the fourth quarter, and you get the ball back down one score with 5 minutes to go.
Malik Blockton said, "Look," he said, "the offense gave us a lead with 7 minutes left, and we didn't hold it up." And so defense knows, hey, look, they did that. We didn't hold it at the end. So,
right.
But, yeah, I thought –
If you had told me before the game, though, that Oklahoma's going to have 22 or even 24 if you count the safety there at the end, like considering the conversations we were having about the Auburn defense last week, I think there was confidence.
They played great.
22, 24 would have been enough, and I thought all told
– It was.
Auburn
would score more than 17.
Absolutely. You have the additional wrinkle that John Mateer was doing it with one hand, apparently.
Which we didn't know about.
Which is crazy.
But we've seen people on adrenaline whatever else happened that day be just fine.
Sure.
It's the next day after. Correct.
Yeah, it's you know, I still think that's, you know, promising as far as a defensive result. And then you wonder, what did they take? Last season, Auburn had something of an offensive meltdown at home against Cal. And they went and they recalibrated and actually decided, okay, well, let's change from one quarterback to another and see what it looks like. I think we even discussed on the show, like maybe at the time, we were thinking, well, maybe the recalibration isn't you pull Peyton Thorne. It's you wonder how much the run pass and how much you're taking, how much you're calling plays that require a lot of time to develop in the passing game. You wonder what sort of – I think a quarterback change is off the table right now. We're not talking about that right now.
Right.
You wonder what other sort of recalibrations there could be for – Saturday, or if they largely believe in the attack they had against Oklahoma, and it's a matter of the players needing to play better.
Yeah, I think – I mean, here's the thing. You could not have dialed up two better plays. You could not have dialed up
a
better –
the two missed Cam Coleman opportunities?
Yeah, the first one was a great call but that one was a little bit more, hey, he slowed down. He throttled down a little bit.
That was on Cam. The second one was on Jackson.
The second one, the double move – after the Jeremiah Cobb run, you could not have dialed up a better play call at a better time.
And you're just thinking,
and just
float
just
it up
punt,
there. Just
throw
just,
a punt.
Yeah,
and he just tried to make it perfect. And then the last one, the double pass. If Eric throws it a little further, it's a walk-in touchdown. If Cam gives it a little bit more air, I thought he jumped a little early. Then he gets hit before the ball got there anyway.
That one hurts.
Well, I don't know
that,
if the official still would have seen it.
No, he would not.
And that one hurts you less than the other two because that driver resulted in a touchdown.
It cost you time at the end.
And it necessitated the Jackson
having
the Jackson fourth down run.
Well, you couldn't punt the ball back
because the Jackson fourth down run, if Auburn holds on and wins,
is the play of the game.
Is one of the plays of the season, right? Considering what it means for him.
It would be to this point.
Yeah, I mean, so and instead. Between Auburn not being able to hold off Oklahoma on that last drive, and then just a radioactive
final couple of plays. Well, but that's the
thing.
Where it impacts you is the last possession. You don't have to go for it, and you don't have to be throwing the ball trying to get a first down. You can be snapping the ball and say, look, we're going to punt it back with 4 minutes left and get the ball back. Mm-hmm. And instead, you're like, well, we got to go for it from our own 5-yard line on fourth and 25. Well, you're not going to get that. It impacted the game in that regard. I thought, hey, the offensive line had some issues. Oklahoma's defensive front was really good. But like Hugh Freeze said, look, it was about split down the middle. And I thought there were check down opportunities where you're like, look, get 6 yards. Take the 6 yards. that's where I thought for the first time Saturday, I thought the patience wasn't as good as it had been. And it should have been because the game was right there. You had stayed in the game by not having to do too much.
It's funny because I think some folks might view that as a cautious approach by Jackson because it's like, well, you don't want to make a mistake downfield. But it's also an aggressive approach by Jackson
because you're looking downfield.
Because you don't want to take the 6 yards that could just keep the wheels moving.
And that's the thing. So, yeah, I think it's, hey, I want to get it down the field. But yeah, there were a couple opportunities. I'm standing in the end zone. And one where Malcolm Simmons was one-on-one. It was a third and long, probably at the 40-something yard line. And he's running across the field, and he takes a sack. And I look over, and Hugh Freeze is just losing it. But he's like, look, throw the ball in front of him to the corner, and that guy's not going to outrun him to go get the football. And, like, that's where he's talking about trust. They trust Cam Coleman. He's like, we got to trust other guys.
Right. And then Jackson talked – now we'll see. Jackson talked about that, after practice Monday.
So now Perry Thompson, some of those guys, like, you're going to have to trust those guys. And here's the thing. It'll be different because you're not going to see the defense that Oklahoma had. Texas A&M's a little bit more straight up. They don't twist a whole lot. Oklahoma gives you 1,000 different looks. Mm-hmm. And I thought that impacted Auburn a whole lot.
And you can't be – there's so much focus on the number of sacks you gave up. Understandably so. You can't be gun-shy about trying to establish the run game however you can against A&M. I think that's with the quarterback. That's with the running backs. And I've been – every week I've been more impressed by some of the stuff they do in the sweep pop pass game, including the touchdown to Malcolm. And I think there are more touches to be had for
– how many times did Auburn run that, though? Did they run it more than once?
No, but I think that's the thing. Some of the things are dictated by what your defense does. And Oklahoma's defensive ends
were those guys,
really
right.
wide,
yep.
and they were trying to get upfield. And so because of that, it took away.
Yeah, you
saw
even the quick screen game.
I'm not saying it was something they should have done more against Oklahoma.
Yeah, I think against A&M, if you go, hey, if you're playing it straight up, then you may be more vulnerable to the edges and you might do some more.
And Singleton and Simmons, and as you mentioned, Jeremiah Cobb, I think are all guys who could turn that into a big play every time. I mean, don't build the entire plane out of it, but I think that's a play that you could find, especially if you're getting some other things going. Like it's an outstanding, sort of counterpunch to some of the things that you've been doing. Otherwise, you want to try to get to Dan before we
let's get to him. Hey, Dan.
Hey guys, just a big question I had, with multiple plays, but it's mainly. You know, not when you were saying take the short stuff if it's there. It's like the guys were playing off of Cam Coleman because they were so worried about getting burnt deep. It seems like Cam could have ran literally a 8 and back and or a back shoulder or anything all game long and could have probably got it, you know, without really risking the ball. And it just seemed like, you know, they did have double safety some, but then a lot of times they had single safety and they would kind of lean over to his side. But it just – I don't know why the ball – it seems like it should go to him 10 times a game just for catches, not just for targets, on just easy stuff. I mean, he can catch the ball, and even if you get 5 yards, you get 5 yards. It's not – I mean, that's great, you know. And then we had the one run that we ran to the outside, which maybe what y'all were talking about a second ago, but we had the one run to the outside that got 15 yards, and then we never went back to it again. It just seems like sometimes we just – all right, we did it, and, you know, it's almost like we tricked him, but then we – like, if something works, go back to it and try it again, you know?
Yeah, I think I went back and looked, and I think they had 7 first down runs of 2 yards or less.
Yeah. And there were a lot of
– that was the problem.
Either
if you look
no
up
gain,
and,
negative yards.
You look up and you go, like, yeah, you're running the ball good, but it was really two plays. And Jackson Arnold had a couple of runs himself. There wasn't a whole lot of success running the football outside of a couple of plays.
With these receivers, and I think especially with Cam Coleman, the answer is not – run the Kansas City Chiefs Alex Smith offense where you're trying to get the ball out of the quarterback's hands as quickly as possible and not taking all that many shots downfield. I think the belief is, even if it didn't necessarily work against a defensive front like Oklahoma, the thought that you're going to be able to – yeah, I mean, you can run some more quick stuff with Jackson, but you're still going to want those shots downfield.
Yeah, but
Cam's probably better at that than anyone else on the team, which is probably why – you see him do that more than run some of the other routes that would open him up to catch and run opportunities.
Yeah, I do agree, though, with Dan. I was standing on the sidelines, and especially in the second half after he had destroyed the freshman, there were times when he was 15 yards off. And even with a safety help inside, that's still an 8-yard pitch and catch all day long.
Yeah, if you look out there and seeing that open, throwing the ball and see what happens.
And see, that's the thing where that has to come. Hey, quarterback, hey, I'm looking at you. Mm-hmm. Do you see where that guy's playing? Okay, look, I'm just going to throw you the football right now. And so I think some of that is playing together. Mm-hmm. And as I was driving over here, I know that doesn't have anything to do with Cam because Cam's been there the entire time. But as I was driving over here today, I was like, Auburn is 4 games into this regular season. Eric Singleton has been out. Malcolm Simmons has been out. We have seen Demari Austin out. Jeremiah Cobb's played with a cast.
And now Horatio's
out. Like, everybody but Cam Coleman and Jackson Arnold in this skill group has missed time and a lot of time in practice. So they've had to juggle some things, and I think it's impacted them a little bit in terms of probably some of the – at least the continuity and rhythm of an offense so far.
Yeah. Well, it just seems like hitting those quick passes out would slow down the pass rush too. I don't know. Just need to mix it up. Appreciate it, guys.
Good hearing from you, Dan. We'll get to our final break of the first hour of the show.
Not saying Dan is exactly doing this, but it is the thought that you've gone from, can this offense go downfield? Can Jackson Arnold...
Oh, yeah, too.
Throw
some shorter stuff. Balls. I mean, you know, it was like, throw the ball, then run the ball. Now throw it short,
Yeah, no, I think deep. So we're going to, I think finding, and that's where, look, A&M you would think has the advantage going in because they're, not only are they at home, but they have the bye week.
They're coming off an open date.
But
right.
The fact that Auburn faced a team like Oklahoma, even if they took some bumps and bruises in that game, and you don't bring the same two deep into A&M that you brought into Oklahoma. I do think if you play well against A&M, especially on offense.
You know what? After a loss like last week, I think it's better to be playing this week. Don said that yesterday, and I agree.
If you play well against A&M offensively, I feel like the data you gathered in that Oklahoma game, finding out what – look, sometimes experiments explode. Right, like sometimes you mix the chemicals together, you think you're going to get one, and it's like, boom. And, like, you know, you get to, you know, Auburn gets another chance to find the right mix. And it feels like, especially, I mean, even after the Oklahoma game, it feels like you've got most of the right pieces where they need to be.
Yeah, I think you have the right ingredients or the right,
A bad performance Saturday by the offensive line, and we may not be saying that.
No, you're right.
The rest of the season.
All right, we need to get to our final break of hour number one, final segment with Jason when we come back here on the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. And Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Final segment of hour number one of the Wednesday Drive, and our final few minutes with Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover. Jason, Texas A&M coming off an open date, so they should be pretty fresh. Auburn has played well over there in the past, maybe not the last time or so, but they've gone in there and played well at times. This is a Texas A&M team that has put up big numbers offensively thus far.
They have, yeah. They scored a lot of points, gave up a lot of points to Notre Dame as well. Really athletic, obviously. Marcel Reed, to me, is the key for this game for Auburn defensively, because here's the thing about him. Only 56.8% of his passes he's completing. Most of those are in the pocket. He is not an outside throw-on-the-run kind of guy. It's been pocket stuff. When he gets outside is where
Has he only been sacked once?
Yeah, and only played 3 games. But he's got 9 touchdown passes and almost 900 yards passing. Mm-hmm. And so – I mean, you look at them, they scored 42 against UTSA, and that was a game that was fairly close for a while.
Right.
44 against Utah State. They've given up 24, 22, and 40 in 3 games. Now, obviously, you got a week to kind of adjust the defense and do those things, but they have given up some points. And so I think that's the thing you look at going, hey, defensively, can you build on what you did last week offensively? Can you go out and score some against a defense that, hey, they've given up some points? And so you look at it, and, I mean, I don't know that anybody would guess that Texas A&M would be 103rd nationally in scoring defense.
Yeah,
and
no
be,
kidding.
And be ranked in the top 10 in the country. And yes. Haven't played UTSA and Utah State in two of those three games and still giving up 28.7 points a game.
Yeah, so the Auburn offense, I mean, you would expect them to have some opportunities.
Yeah, they're going to have opportunities. And again, can you protect football, which they've done, and then can you take advantage of those opportunities when you get them? That's the thing. And so you look, Notre Dame made plays all over the field last week. Obviously, it was at Notre Dame. Can you do that on Saturday? If you do, you're going to have a shot.
Jason, have a great trip out there. Let everybody know how they can keep up with everything. There's so much going on now with the basketball transition and getting ready for A&M.
Tons of stuff. AuburnUndercover.com. Follow us all the social channels. Find me on X, Twitter, at ITATJason. So, yeah, a lot of things to check out today.
All right. Have a great trip.
Appreciate it.
All right, we need to step aside. We're halfway done. Right back with hour number two of the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. Our thanks to Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover joining us in hour number one. Hope you had a chance to hear JC.
Had some full disclosure, had some recording issues with today's podcast. I swear they weren't my fault. I'm going to blame it on the software we were using. And I think I've been able to...
No, there were too many things open on the computer.
Well, there were a couple things I'm not blaming.
Look, computers can only do so much. I mean, you feel like they can do everything. But when there's more windows open than you can count, I mean, it sort of slows things down.
It was struggling, but I think I've been able to salvage most of today's podcast, including
a little tip for folks if your computer's running a little slow, depending on the age. I mean, look and see how many things you have open.
Close some tabs.
That might help.
Close some tabs. Well, we've got the podcast will be up shortly after we get done on the air. Today, podcast The Drive presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors, and they also sponsor the text box, which is 334-564-1840. Jason was fantastic in hour number one on a historically busy week.
It really is.
And a historic day for Auburn University Athletics.
And historic day, right?
And no, I think either one is acceptable for when you get into the H's, but with the passing of the torch, and I was lucky enough to get an actual picture, with the two of those guys shaking hands, Bruce and I got
a bunch of pictures.
When Bruce,
got a couple of pictures of a bunch of people holding up their phones.
Sure. I mean, it was just a really special day there on campus as Stephen Pearl becomes the 22nd men's basketball coach in Auburn University history, succeeding his father.
Well, I got a great shot of the back of Jeff Shearer's head. I don't need to keep that one, I don't guess.
And as we said,
he does have great hair.
Yeah, he absolutely does. He has fantastic hair, and big fans of Jeff Shearer here. But if you missed any of the, and he went for what, 45 minutes or so. I mean, almost an hour. It's worth your time, and we got some. I got a question up. Jacob got a question up. But the opening statement and the. Mm-hmm. List of acknowledgments.
Oh, he was great.
Yeah, I would
really handled it well. I thought one of the more impressive opening press conferences. Not been to a few, so I think a very good start for Stephen and for this Pearl era.
Oh sure, I mean I think this is a I mean it was that Stephen was fantastic in a moment that he'd been preparing for a long time and a moment that was very emotional. I think he was. He was obviously there were several moments where he was
where he had to stop and just catch.
Yeah, I mean it was very powerful, and the moments when talking about what he's learned from his father, when talking about his wife, like these were it was very touching stuff, and then when he got the opportunity to talk some ball. You know, he really enjoyed that aspect of the press conference too. And so, yeah, I think it's really worth your time to check out as much of the Stephen Pearl press conference as you can, as that team has, as you mentioned, Bill, couple of big exhibitions coming up. Not, you know, they're very, very soon, mm-hmm. and then you're talking 6 weeks from now. We will be in the thick,
less than six weeks of opening
week.
Yeah, so there was a lot of interest in, you know, seeing this new team. I mean, since it is almost completely new with the exception of Tahad Pettiford, and now you're going to see it with Stephen Pearl at the helm. But there shouldn't be, you know, I don't think it's going to look tremendously different because, I mean, Stephen's been the defensive guy and Mike's been the offensive guy, and that will stay the same.
With the amount of basketball we've talked this week, or, you know, and I had to miss yesterday's show, but Monday and today, with the amount of basketball.
We talked a little football yesterday.
I believe it. And thankfully, yeah, you know, and we'll talk some more football in this hour as well. But with the amount of basketball we've talked in the last couple of shows, you would think Auburn is like 1-3 or 0-4 in football, and they're not.
No.
They just went punch for punch with a team that, going into the game, when Hugh Freeze was saying, and I know the John Mateer injury throws some of this into disarray, but going into the game, Hugh Freeze said Oklahoma looks playoff caliber. At a couple of key positions on the field. Mm-hmm. And when I think about that Oklahoma team, kind of reminds me of like the 19 Auburn team, where it's like when you can be overwhelming with your front seven and you can have a playmaker at quarterback. And you think about that Auburn team lost, like, went 9-3 with three close games in the 2019 season when Bo was a true freshman, and beat Justin Herbert and Oregon on opening day. Like, that team had, and I think Oklahoma's got something, with a healthy Mateer, Oklahoma's got some of that with.
I still think they're going to need to run the ball a little bit better at some point.
Yeah,
but who knows
what their season looks like. I mean, I know they've got at least Texas and maybe Ole Miss as well.
You didn't wonder if Mateer's going to be back for Texas. I mean, with the reports that he could be out a month. I mean, they're fortunate they've got Kent State and an open date before they have Texas. I would imagine they'll do everything they can to have him ready for the for the matchup against Texas.
Yeah, he's going to probably have to try to Willis Reed it. He's going to have to Janai Broome that thing and you know, make a legend of himself being back for Texas, because that's got to be, if you transfer to play for Oklahoma and you think you've got a chance to win big games.
The Texas game is the biggest.
I mean, you got to. I mean,
it's the biggest.
Yeah, I think he's going to have to be in a coma to not be, you know, at the Texas State Fair making plays.
We didn't talk about this the other day. What did you think? And partly it was because, Monday we were talking so much basketball. What did you think about Oklahoma jumping four spots, jumping up four spots, and Auburn dropping out? I mean, I thought, if Oklahoma is that impressive that they move up to number seven, you would think a team that is ranked playing them at their place, losing by seven after what happened Saturday, wouldn't fall out of the polls. It's almost that's a slap, it appears to me, at Auburn. Like, well, you're not very good, but Oklahoma really is. And it's like, I didn't understand that. That didn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, the polls, especially this early, you know, the wild fluctuations you're seeing week to week, you struggle to make sense of it.
I almost feel like every time there's something crazy in the polls, wait till the next week for the folks that didn't realize what they were doing to try to figure it out.
Yeah, and there's, I mean, if you had told me, back in August, you said, hey, leading up to A&M, you're going to be talking a lot of basketball, and Mississippi State's going to be ahead of Auburn in the coaches' poll, I'd have said,
boy. That seat didn't just warm for Hugh Freeze.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
And instead, and by the way, Arizona State still ahead of Mississippi State in that same coaches' poll, Bill, even though two teams played.
And Mississippi State beat them.
Soundly. Yes. And State hasn't lost.
Right.
You're talking about an undefeated Mississippi State team that's not in the top 25 in either poll.
I asked Jake yesterday. He's not convinced that State has that great a shot against Tennessee, but I think that could be a pretty interesting ball game in Starkville. Now, the one thing we were saying is it's a shame for State that's a 3:15 game and not a Saturday night game against Tennessee.
It is, although I'm firmly of the opinion And I know this is like fans are going to want to throw me in the river when I say this, Bill. But like, I think when you get into the 230, 315 range, I think that's perfect for a home game. I think that's like the fans have been, they've gotten just the right amount of sauced. It's not, I mean, it's hot, but the temperature, yeah, it's cooling off. And I've seen too many 6 o'clock and 7 o'clocks where that fan base is tired. In the second half,
yeah,
they've been going all day. Baylor, I was there in Waco, and I saw, I mean, I turned to Nathan and Justin in the third quarter and said, this place is a lot quieter, even in big moments. You know, down seven, Auburn's got the ball on third down, right? You know, Baylor's down seven, Auburn's got the ball on third down. This place should be overwhelming or as loud as it's been all game. These folks are tired. It's been a blackout. It's at 6 o'clock.
Yeah,
hot game.
Oh, I'm not going to argue with you there. I like the mid afternoon games.
I think you get most SEC teams. LSU might disagree a little bit. You get most SEC.
They disagree a lot.
Yeah, I think you get.
But they're
most,
about the only ones.
But that's the one fan base. But I think you get most SEC fan bases at full throttle in that 230, 330 range.
Oh yeah, you've had plenty of time,
including
for prep,
including A&M, which I would expect on Saturday, yeah, for folks who've been to Kyle Field, and then I think that's like Arkansas is probably disappointed that Notre Dame's not a little bit later.
Yeah,
because that's a game where if Fayetteville at 3 o'clock, maybe it's different than 11. They've been stomped at 11 o'clock a couple of times in Fayetteville before. If you're Mississippi State, you'd like to have that one at 6 o'clock. But I think at 3:15, they'll be. I mean, it's a sellout.
The cowbells will be a clanging.
They've announced it's a sellout, and we haven't seen Tennessee take that show on the road.
Nope, that's
this season. I think, and the fact that they're still optimistic and believing at State that they might have something because they won that Arizona State game. That's a hornet's nest that Tennessee's walking into.
Yeah, this is their first conference game too, so a chance to make a huge statement. 334-321-1390 is the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. Was it Josh?
We got Josh.
Hey, Josh.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Pretty good.
Hey, hadn't been able to call in a while, but coming off of that game, like the Texas A&M, I don't know where I'm at as a fan right now. Like, I really wanted to win that game against Oklahoma because I was like, you know, we just need to finally win, like a big SEC road game. Find a way to win, and it was just unfortunate. We just couldn't find, you know, a way to either get a stop on defense at the end or the offense couldn't get a one last drive to go back and retake the lead. I just want to get y'all started. Like that, the last drive when the offense had the ball, you know, it hurt us that we had the penalty on special teams, which put us, you know, back in our own, like, 10, so that didn't help. But the offense just seemed like they were not prepared for that moment. Like, it just seemed like there was no urgency or preparation for that moment. And that's the part that's concerning to me because I'm like, this just keeps happening to us. It looks like we're just not prepared to take the moment and seize it. And that comes down to players, but it comes down to the coaches. Do they not have them prepared for that moment? But I would find that hard to believe with a big program like Auburn that you wouldn't be prepared for every little moment that could arise. I mean, I don't know.
You know what I would say, Josh, that if things had been going really smoothly for Auburn all game and then you have a drive like that at the end, I think that's far more concerning than – that would be more – you know, because then it's a crunch time issue, I suppose, and you can – like Auburn had glimpses of that all game.
Oh, my goodness, there were 7 sacks in the first half. I mean, I guess only 6 of them officially,
yeah,
but
Auburn,
I mean
– Auburn had a – no, hold on, keep in mind – Auburn had a 6-play, 9-yard drive that starts with a 40-yard pass to Cam Coleman.
Yeah.
So do the math on what you have to do. It
was really tough. I mean, Auburn struggled so much against that front four. And I will say, hey, Josh, I'm with you.
It starts with a special teams penalty.
Oh yeah,
too. Starts with you at the 8 because of a special teams penalty.
But there are a couple of things that make you wonder about clock management.
Oh, sure.
I mean, Auburn got the ball back with nearly 5 minutes to go. By the time, you got to the 2 minute warning, I think they were about where they started, and that's more than a little frustrating to have used 2.5 minutes and still be about where you started. You got a first down, then you end up with a holding penalty and another false start. So you're back.
Well, you run to Cobb with about 4.5 minutes to go in the game, and you're right. I think you run three plays in 2 minutes.
Yeah.
So if y'all don't mind, let me just get y'all's thoughts on these two other things. Speaking of Cobb, I personally feel like Cobb should be running back one. I feel like he gives us the most burst when running. I feel like with just the few carries he had in that game against Oklahoma, he had like 60-something yards. I think,
yeah, 44 on one, I believe. Yep.
And then Cam Coleman needs to be getting more targets.
Oh, no doubt. We talked about that in the first hour. Yeah, Jason Caldwell. Yeah.
All right, guys. I appreciate it. See y'all.
Appreciate it, Josh. Yeah, Jason was saying in the first hour, he was there on the sideline, and maybe you couldn't see it always on TV, but he said that the freshman corner was giving him 15 yards on every play. And you've got to be able then to just get that, you know, connection between quarterback and receiver. If you're that open, you know, take a couple of steps, I'm going to throw you the ball. We're going to get 8 yards to a first down every single play till they decide to play it tighter.
I'm torn on that sort of that description of the running back position, where it's like I don't know if
Damari Alston is by far the best blocker in pass protection. And when you've got a game where Auburn was dropping Jackson Arnold back 49 times, they felt like they had to have their best pass protector in there trying to help out a little bit.
I also wonder if Damari has a little bit more elusiveness to him, because I think about Cobb as a guy who's got excellent straightaway speed, that burst that makes him really useful in short yardage, and that burst that can help him turn what seemed to be a pedestrian play, breaks a tackle, it's suddenly a 40-yard run. With Alston, if you need to make a move close to the line of scrimmage, if you've got to make that first guy miss, I wonder if Damari Alston's got a little bit of that smoothness to him. Not to mention that he's tough to bring down, you know. So he can get you those. Like, I wouldn't sell what Damari Alston brings to the offense short. I can understand wanting to see more Jeremiah Cobb, but there's a reason that Hugh Freeze was insistent. I know he likes to say that he was predicting a breakout season for Jeremiah Cobb all offseason, and he was saying those things too, but he was also saying every time it came up, he was saying the most complete running back on the team is Damari Alston.
And the other thing is, I don't know when Jeremiah got the hip pointer, so I mean that could play into how many carries he's going to have. But yeah, clock management has been a concern.
Urgency, you know, a lack of urgency in those situations. Yeah.
But the other thing to think about is Auburn's game plan had been, and now we talked about, you know, quicker passes and shorter passes today and at Hugh's press conference on Monday. But when your game plan has been, we feel like we can beat this team deep and we want to throw it downfield, it's tough when you're going up against that front four, and you saw it there at the end. I mean, there's not much time to get the ball out.
And I've seen you know, clips on social media of individual sacks from Saturday where it's almost as though, like, hey, what's going on with the offensive linemen here? And I've thought, like, well, that was maybe an example of Jackson having enough time and needing to make a play. And, you know, I do.
There were a couple of whiffs, though.
I can understand why they would think, oh, well, look at the receiver corner matchup, and that's you know, tempting to go after as many times as possible. That's not the only part of throwing it deep. You know, you also have to win those matchups at the line of scrimmage, and Jackson's got to know what to do if he doesn't have time to wait for the deep shot to materialize the way he really wanted to. And again, I keep coming back to, feels like those were missed opportunities, a fair way to describe it. You know, that game was full of teachable moments. Like, that game was full of valuable experience, if that's how Auburn can event, you know, if Auburn, question is, can Auburn apply it to Saturday against Texas A&M? I think they'll also be happy that, because it was such an upgrade from, as far as the atmosphere, like the fact that
And that Auburn, was a hostile. That was a hostile environment.
And Auburn's offensive line had a couple of moments against Baylor where the communication was off. Even though, you know, maybe a quarter of that stadium was pro Auburn. When you had Oklahoma, like, there were too many. I want to be careful. There probably were too many breakdown communication wise at the offensive line level, or times when it felt like, guys couldn't, they didn't know, like false starts,
false starts.
Like I would think that if you can cut down on that for Texas A&M, then again, mm-hmm. Oklahoma's valuable experience. If that continues after A&M, you're going to feel like maybe you've got
Have a real problem.
The makings of a problem. Yeah, you're close to Houston, and you've got a problem.
All right, we'd love for you to join us here in the second hour of the drive. Again, the hotline number 334-321-1390. We mentioned it earlier. We have tickets to see Stone Temple Pilots over at Sweetland in LaGrange on Friday. If you would like a pair of tickets to see the Stone Temple Pilots, just give us a call on that hotline, 334-321-1390.
That's right. Lawn seats for the for STP on Friday night. Show starts at 8:00 Eastern. They're in LaGrange, and yeah, next caller will get a pair of tickets to see the Stone Temple Pilots this weekend.
So go ahead and give us a call, and we'll give those away here as we continue with the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
And Dan Peck on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Wednesday afternoon.
There's Bruce joining us while he still can as head coach.
Well, he will still be. I mean, I can't imagine.
Emeritus.
I can't imagine, most people not if you don't know him well enough or just don't feel comfortable calling him Bruce, you're going to call him Coach. So he'll always be Coach Bruce Pearl, regardless.
And we look forward, I mentioned this,
we'll always welcome him, bringing us back.
Oh, not just that, but I mentioned to Kirk at the press conference earlier today. Well, not just that we've got that has been that email has been sent.
Yeah, okay.
But also, I think we'd love to have Steven on the show.
Oh yes,
at some point before the start of the season, and with a couple of weeks to go, and whenever he wants to start doing media again, we've had retired Auburn coaches in the past as recurring guests on our mm-hmm. show, Bill, and wouldn't it be fun to occasionally?
Yeah, and look, you're going to be busy a few times during the fall. If he wants to, hop in and guest host.
I'll teach him how to run the board.
Yeah. He won't even have to run the board initially.
So they told me. I think that opening lines of communication out there to maybe have either Coach Pearl mm-hmm. on the show in the coming weeks and months would be a lot of fun, and I don't think I think we may find Bruce Pearl as a competitor of ours as far as the podcasting game pretty soon. I wouldn't be all that shocked to see him.
Well, that's true.
I'd see him pursue whatever media opportunities.
But he better not be going hosting hosting radio shows.
Yeah, stay off Bill Cameron's turf. I wouldn't be shocked to see Bruce pursue any number of media opportunities. I already raised the pot.
I was asked that earlier today. It's like, I expect to see him pop up again on ESPN. It's like, I'd be surprised not to.
I mean, it depends on how often he wants to venture to the studio, or how much he can do from home, or how,
I think he can do quite a bit without having to travel too far.
Yeah, that's true. And the Atlanta airport's pretty close, if he needs to get up to Bristol for big moments. But, yeah, I mean, if you'd asked me, even a couple of weeks ago, what do I think Bruce Pearl does post-retirement? Yeah, I mean, seeing the way Nick Saban has very neatly not only kept his Alabama advocacy position or his office there on campus, but to also work very neatly into SEC coverage on ESPN as one of the most recognizable coaches of the generation.
And Bruce has already shown he is very comfortable and very, very good at that.
I just wouldn't be shocked at all if we get closer to college basketball season or after 1 year of laying low and staying in Auburn. I just think he's just feels like too easy of a fit for especially with more SEC basketball coverage than ever, to have Bruce as part of is he going to call games for his with Steven? I don't know, but it's like no, I could see him doing any number of media, again, pursuing any number of media.
And just about any of those absolutely would not hurt in his role as a not just an ambassador, but a fundraiser for Auburn. I mean, you think of how you know, still getting out there and seeing him on ESPN and hearing him, seeing and hearing him different places, that's not going to hurt one bit in helping your NIL fundraising.
No, I think Charles Barkley has been a, you know, he's been a fantastic ambassador for Auburn for, mm-hmm. what, the 40 years since he left school,
yeah.
right? And, I mean, I think that having someone, you know, who was as visible as Bruce Pearl the last decade plus for Auburn basketball, now transitioning into something of an ambassador role himself, it gives Auburn, you know, Auburn has a couple of the more famous figures in contemporary basketball,
yeah, no kidding.
Directly associated with the school.
Yeah, so yes, don't be surprised. I mean, as a matter of fact, sort of expect that. But yes, we would we'd love to have you know, either of the Pearls joining us whenever they get the opportunity. 334-321-1390. Thought we had the tickets given away, but we still have a pair of tickets to see Stone Temple Pilots Friday night over at the Sweetland Amphitheater in LaGrange.
Tell you what, when we come back, because we're coming up on break time. But let,
right.
you want to break down this SEC slate, because it is,
man, it is a very, very good one. Very interesting
weekend. Games
coming up this weekend. Yes, we will do that. We'll look at all those games as we continue. Again, if you'd like a pair of tickets to Stone Temple Pilots, just give us a call, 334-321-1390, as we continue here on the Wednesday Drive.
At 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio, and let's get to the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. And Brian is up next down in Florida. Hey, Brian.
Hey, gentlemen. Always good to talk to you. You know, I actually was trying to call. I was planning on calling in on Monday to talk about the game, and then it was the Pearl news broke,
oh, yeah.
And I just didn't feel it was worth to take away that Monday from him. And, you know, I'll say this about him. You know, as far as I'm concerned, I'm happy for him. I hope, you know, I'm glad that he's going to stay as our ambassador. As far as I'm concerned, we could change the town of Auburn to a kingdom and name him King of Auburn. I'd be okay with that. You know, I'm nervous about Steven, but I'm excited for, you know, I hope he can fill. He's got big shoes to fill, so
mm-hmm.
We'll see. But you know, it was an amazing, amazing run, and I I'll echo. Jake kind of said it yesterday, and another caller mentioned it on Wednesday. You know, I don't know if you can say that Bruce is the best coach when you're comparing him towards Pat Dye, and I don't like making comparisons to like that. But I would say he's got my vote for best Auburn coach in history, and maybe at least 1A to Pat's, you know, 1B type of thing, because the way that I look at it, you know, Pat came in and really changed, you know, that we weren't afraid of Alabama anymore and we were going to change that culture.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think about what Bruce did, he not only changed our basketball culture, he changed the entire state's culture, because before Bruce came in and resurrected the Auburn program, I mean, Alabama had okay years, but they didn't care about basketball like they do now.
No, you're right.
So, with respect to the game, you know, I've got a little bit of a different point. I listened to Jake, and he was fired up yesterday. And,
yes,
and
he was.
I don't disagree with a lot of.
Was
his,
it, is it
his,
is it all refs? What's
no
his
no
deal?
No
what's
Jake he? Jake just you know he Jake brought up the fact that Hugh Freeze has the worst record among SEC coaches in close games,
yeah.
And that it's time it's past time for close being enough and should-haves and things like that.
Yeah.
That Auburn needs to win. They need to win these ball games now.
Yeah, but I do have a little bit of a different take on this game, and I told my fellow Auburn friends and stuff as we were texting. You know, I said at the end of this game, I said, you know, as bad as we looked, which you know we didn't look terrible, but we had a lot of miscues and a lot of bad things that we did in that game. And you guys have talked about it ad nauseum, so we don't need to go back into that. But as bad as we've looked, bad as we looked with penalties and all that stuff, is as far as the refs giving them the game, which I think they did, but again, you've talked about that. I will say within since probably Gus's last year, so not counting Gus's last year, into this year, I would say, in my opinion, this is the first time after a game where I can truly see that we are close. And I'm not using this as an excuse, but saying that I came out after that game and saying, you know what, like, yeah, we lost by technically 5 points. I'm not going to count that safety at the end, but technically 5 points in a game that we looked like we did. They got all the breaks they got, and we still had a way to win that game. And I came out feeling like, man, I like how the rest of the season shapes up. Like, if we can go in there and do what we did and clean up that nonsense that we did, I mean, I really like our chances the rest of this year and just, you know, performing well and doing well.
Well, Auburn wasn't competing like they did Saturday on the road against top 15 teams those first couple of seasons with Hugh Freeze, right? Like Auburn went, what, Oklahoma's ranked, I forget what LSU was ranked in that first year when Auburn went to Baton Rouge and got vaporized by Jaden Daniels. And you felt like Oklahoma was better at every single position 2 years ago. Like it's such a far cry. Granted, the result's the same that you lost, but it's such a far cry from that I can understand why even in defeat, folks can think this thing is ultimately headed in the right direction and that there could be a different result coming up very soon.
Yeah, I mean, all you want as a fan, you know, is to have hope going into a game. And I feel like we haven't had that for a long time. And granted, we still got to, like, they got to win this game. We need to win this game. But it's good to not have that feeling so much of like, man, well, this is a loss. This is a loss.
Oh, yeah, it's going to take a miracle. We'd have to play perfect, that kind of thing. Auburn, that's what Auburn showed. I mean, they showed, man, they were anything but perfect. They were making all kinds of mistakes, not getting any help from the officials, and still had an opportunity to win it at the end.
Yeah. So, anyways, guys, I'll let you go. I know you were going to talk about the schedules. Love to hear it. But those are my 2 cents on this weekend. And I'll probably give you a call Friday. We'll talk about upcoming games and lines and all that stuff.
Sounds good, Brian. Wow. Did we say this?
See you, buddy.
334-321-1390. And yeah, calls come first. We've got a full bank of them. Who's up next?
Pat's next. What's up, bud?
Hey, guys. I kind of ran it just a little bit yesterday about, you know, the different – you know, situations. But one thing that you kind of brought up again today that I didn't really think about. Well, I thought about it during the game, and it was driving me crazy on the false starts. And we did this last year for some reason. We talk about, oh, we're going to go fast, we're going to get tempo. It seems to me when the crowd's going crazy and you're on the road, we line up, and then it's like in the two chump games, we were running Singleton across in motion, back, getting in the backfield, and I don't know the reason for doing that. I guess is to see if they're in man or whatever. But we were doing that for eye candy, and it seemed like we would do that. But in this game, it's like we sit there and they're lined up and ready to go. He's looking around, and we're just waiting to snap the ball. And it's like, I'm like, snap the ball already. Snap it. Just snap it. It's like, what are you waiting for? It's like, we're not going up. We're not going in motion to see if they're in man. It's like everybody's set. They're all just standing there. And we wait like 15 seconds to snap the ball. And I think that was part of two of the false starts were because, like, we were just waiting and waiting and waiting. And then it's like if the crowd's super loud.
Yeah, crowd noise makes it really difficult then to know exactly when the snap count is. Now, Jason was saying one thing that I didn't, you know, I wasn't able to notice as much on TV, but he was talking about how wide their defensive ends were split and that they were then pushing straight upfield, and that would have made it more difficult to really run more of the of that jet sweep action.
Well, it's not necessarily the jet sweep. It's just, I can understand if you're going to do the jet sweep, then you have to wait for that to kind of progress, you know, before you snap the ball. I'm saying if you're lined up and everybody's in their position and you're not going to do any extra kind of motion,
go
why do we wait
it.
10 more seconds to snap the ball?
Dad,
why don't you
don't
just
know.
Snap it? I mean, it seems like we're purposely running the clock down. Is what it almost the only explanation to me is why would you sit there and just wait to snap the ball? And so they're waiting and they're waiting and then they fall start. It's almost like why don't we just get up there, go just go up, just go fast, just go tempo. I feel like if we would have went up there and just went tempo and ran the plays and just did it, I feel like it would have solved a lot of our problems. But we just and the quick little passes, it just seems to me like I don't understand why we want to run the clock all the way down.
I wonder, Pat. Like I my guess is, and I thought going into the game against Oklahoma that they were going to try to run tempo, like especially after winning first down. It's like, all right, first down worked, so now you're on schedule. Second down, let's get to the line quickly. I think the fact that they didn't win nearly as many first downs as they thought they were going to.
Their third down, down average to make was 11.5. Third and 11.5.
It's tougher to go tempo if first down does not go the way you think it's going to, and suddenly it's second and long instead
eight,
of second and five.
It seemed like,
and I also wonder if because the offensive line was struggling the way they did, they thought, let's shorten this game, fewer opportunities for Oklahoma with the ball. Because you're right. I mean, there are times when it felt like maybe they're going to go fast here, and instead they'd feel comfortable running 35 seconds off the clock between plays.
Well, does it? I mean, are they okay? They call the play within before 15 seconds on the clock, so the quarterback can hear the play. But we're not in a huddle, so everybody lines up. So I mean, are they looking on the sideline to see what the play is? Maybe they're getting the play in late or something. Could that be what it is?
It's not very likely, to be honest.
I mean, I suppose like that's a possibility too. But I thought there were times when they seemed set, like you said.
Yeah.
In advance, and then took time to run the play.
Yeah. Well, it just seems like there's been times when we did it a lot last year, especially with Peyton, and it was driving me crazy. It's like we're waiting and waiting, and I can understand if you're winning by two touchdowns in the fourth quarter with 10 minutes to go, then run the clock on down. I get that. But it seems like we're not – going tempo, we seem to do better. So it just seems like running the clock all the way down and then you can't hear, and then you're just trying to time it just perfectly at some point, with 5 seconds to go. I mean, that's what Pavia does. I mean, he runs that thing all the way down to 2 seconds. It's crazy. But I don't understand why we would want to do that. You know what I'm saying? I mean, we've got explosive players. It seems like we would just want to run the play. So that was what drove me crazy was like hike the ball and then we fall start, and I'm like, oh my God, are you kidding me? We're not gonna hike the ball and now we're gonna get a false start. So that was I just wish someone would ask a question. I mean, I know y'all can only ask what you can ask, but it just seemed like are we trying to run the clock down?
I thought at times against Oklahoma the answer was yes.
Yeah, I think so.
Like I think absolutely the answer became like, all right, between the game situation and the way that they weren't having success blocking, like they thought, like maybe the strategy is fewer plays.
But to see the last drive, last drive wins.
That last drive, the lack of urgency there is as concerning as any of it.
No kidding,
right? Because even if it's strategy the rest of the game,
when you're down in the final 5 minutes,
you're only gonna get one drive left.
Yep.
Like it's
I was actually happy when they scored quick, and my brother was going crazy. And I said, "Look, I want five minutes to drive down and score."
That's right.
But I'm thinking if they, we'll see what happens Saturday. My guess would be if they can win first downs against Texas A&M, they're going to try to push the tempo. And if they don't, it might be more of try to disregard the clock to just try to get the drive back on track, and then. And if that means you're running plays to, you're snapping it with 2 seconds left, you're snapping it with 2 seconds left.
Well, I guess this defense, the way they're giving up points, we need to just concentrate on scoring and just hope our defense can lock them up. I think lock them up. Yeah,
it's
going to
take
points,
a few points. I think it's going to take a few points to win this. Appreciate the call. We need it. We'll get one more call in before we get to our final break of the afternoon. Who we got?
Spectre is hanging on.
Hey, Spectre.
I hate it when you get me right before break.
No, we're not going to rush you. We're not going to rush you. We got time.
Well, I'm glad people are talking about up-tempo. I told y'all about this before the game, that we should have been doing that the whole time. And
how many times, how many times did they have to throw it in the garbage like we were talking about last week because first down did not go the way they thought it was going to?
Yeah, you're right. But, you know, oh, come on, people, leave me alone. Hold on, man.
All right, Spectre,
I'll tell you what. Yeah. We're gonna go ahead and get to our final break. We'll continue with Spectre. Let him catch that call. We'll be back segment.
He put us on. He put us on hold. That never happened.
All right, let's get to it.
Yellowwood knows that a 5-star backyard is the place to make lasting memories, like roasting marshmallows.
Welcome back. Final segment of the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Again, big thanks to our pal Jason Caldwell from 24/7 for joining the show in hour number one. If you missed any of that, the podcast will be available shortly after The Drive is over, presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. Go to wherever you get your favorite podcast and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron, or go to ESPNAU.com and use the podcast center. Let's get to Spectre. He put us on hold there at the and then we had to get to break, so we got Spectre back. How you doing, bud?
Are we back?
Yeah, you're back.
All right, great. I got to make it quick anyway. Yeah, let me say that, you know, we talked about being up-tempo last week right before the game and all. And I was waiting for it, to tell you the truth. I was saying, all right, this is going to be a good game. We're going to put them where they should be in the loser bracket. And anyway, I was listening to the game, and I was so frustrated, just like the last caller said. I mean, we sit there and just wait till the clock, just wasting time. I mean, I heard Jason Campbell say 5 minutes when we left in the game and we had the ball, he said, man, we should be going fast tempo. Really? Yes, we should. We should have been doing that the last three quarters.
But it's especially important with 4.5, 5. Like when you don't have but one possession left.
Yes,
you know, you,
absolutely.
I mean, yeah, it was. I mean, because it was like we were saying last week, Spectre. It's one thing to regroup because it's 2nd and 13, right? And your quarterback just got, you know, body slammed on the previous play. You know, maybe you don't necessarily hurry up into that situation, but when it's crunch time. I mean, I thought Auburn actually did okay on that first drive of the fourth quarter, getting Oklahoma off balance when it was second down, and Auburn had done well on first down. But you're right. There are times that fourth in that crunch time drive, which I think it's crucial to remember again, starts with a special teams mistake, right? When it's the most important drive of the game, the most important drive of the game, Bill, and you're at the 8-yard line to start, because
and you got a first down. You got a first down fairly quickly.
But the block in the back puts you at the 8-yard line in a situation where you absolutely cannot have a special team.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, you're thinking you're going to get the ball at the 25. If you just catch the ball in the end zone, because Rayshon brings it out of the end zone, you catch it there in the end zone, you've got almost 5 minutes, you're at the 25-yard line. But you never get back to the 25.
All right, Spectre, what else you got?
Well, let me say this one thing. I got to let you guys go. The biggest thing about fast tempo to me is I do not want to give the defense an edge. I don't want them to get the chance to read what we're doing, and all of a sudden they look over and see a guy that's out of position. When you're sitting there running the clock down, you're giving the defense that opportunity to adjust, especially on substitutions, they can't sub when you're going fast tempo.
Well, they can't sub. The thing is, now you can get to the line of scrimmage and not let them sub, but it still lets them rest a little bit if you're taking that long.
Read, react, and rest. You're absolutely right, Spectre.
That's right. See you guys.
Appreciate it, Spectre. We lost our last call.
Hank, we were going to have time for you. Call us back if you get the chance. Yeah. Otherwise, you know, we'll get to you another time. We promised folks we'd look at the slate.
Well, I'll tell you what we can do. We can at least talk about the ones we're going to talk about tomorrow. Is Ferg going to be with us tomorrow?
Ferg should be in the house tomorrow. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, you mentioned
leaving for Houston on Friday.
Mentioned a couple of them, but I mean, you've got Alabama at Georgia. I mean, what a huge matchup that one is. And you know, I've gone from thinking, you used to think Alabama, Georgia, they're going to be a couple of great defenses on display. Maybe, but they're going to be points. They're going to be some points in that ball game in Athens.
I mean, Ty Simpson has played.
Ty Simpson's been phenomenal when given time.
He's been phenomenal. It's a huge upgrade to go against Georgia versus the teams he's faced the last couple of weeks, and he's got to do it in Athens. I think that's going to be how Alabama's passing attack fares. Georgia's offense had some really good moments against Tennessee.
Yes, they did.
But they were down early. You know, they got punched early. So I mean, I think that's and Kirby virtually never loses home games.
No, just remember last year when Alabama jumped up 28-0 and Georgia came all the way back, took the lead before. I mean, this one should be a wild one. I'm really interested. LSU at Ole Miss.
I'm buying.
Lane says take the over.
You know, I mean, I want to see if this is the game where we finally get like superstar Nussmeier. Like, I mean, because that's what LSU's going to need on the road.
I agree. They're gonna need to score some points against this Ole Miss team.
And meanwhile, I mean, is it Tom Brady? Is it Wally Pipp? I mean, do you have
Is Austin Simmons going? Can I ever get back in?
Is Trinidad? I mean, this guy's fun. I mean,
he really is.
It's gonna
be. He can move too. Yeah. He really is athletic.
And he's a D2 national champion. Yeah. I mean, I know. Sometimes you got to worry about like the exchange rate of the competition you faced.
It looks like he was just a gem that for some reason was overlooked and was there at that level because he looks every bit the part of a big time SEC quarterback.
And we've seen we've seen FCS and D2 players go to the NFL. Mm-hmm. Shouldn't be all that shocking that a superstar quarterback from that level happens to be good enough to play really high level SEC ball. They destroyed Tulane.
Yeah, they really did. Yeah, that was a surprise. Tennessee at Mississippi State. We've talked about that a little bit. That's another really interesting game. Can State continue this? I mean, they've already topped last year's win total, right?
That would be so much fun if they could find a way to win this one and keep this thing rolling. Beating Arizona State at home is one thing. This Tennessee team is tough. Should have beaten Georgia.
Yeah.
Should have beaten Georgia. Didn't do it. A second loss now.
Oh, would that hurt.
It would hurt with some tough teams coming up on the schedule for UT.
And then there's Notre Dame, Arkansas. Notre Dame travels to Fayetteville. Arkansas has come so close the last couple of ball games.
Notre Dame 9-3. Notre Dame won't make the playoff.
No,
they got
to win this.
They got to win them all.
Yeah, we'll talk about these at greater length tomorrow. Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer will join us. We're out of time though here on the Wednesday edition of the Drive. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here. Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying, skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.